Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name is David Reed, and this man here is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek, how are you doing?
I am okay.
Oh, that was exciting. You were keeping us on tenterhooks there.
I've got ulcer in my mouth.
I hate that. Yes, so how are you going to get rid of that? Are you going to give some Bonjela?
Bonjela.
Is that what you use?
Milk.
Milk? Do milk? Does milk help?
Milk is good for it for ulcers and stomach ulcers and stuff like that, so it must be good for mouth ulcers.
Oh, okay.
Straight from the cow, though.
Straight from the cow. We've got live.
I
live
need from to the find cow. The cow, and I need to put a gun in its mouth.
I mean, you'll have to have a long reach if you...
Well, I'd have to...
It's more likely to piss if you put a gun in its mouth than to express
milk.
Well,
I'm not going
to
put my mouth around its piss hole.
Well, I don't know, Mary. You hadn't finished explaining what you were going to do.
I'd put my mouth around the teat, so...
With a gun in its mouth. Have you seen a cow? They're very long. You're going to have an accomplice for this.
I mean, do I need to put a gun in it?
No, I don't. I think that is an unnecessary step.
I did get emailed.
I mean, you'd have to buy a gun for a start. I mean, what was the gun for?
Just so it looks like it's a bit more sort of cool rather than just me drinking milk.
I think there's no way to make drinking straight from an udder look cool. I mean, imagine how would... who's cool? How would George Clooney look drinking from an udder, you know?
Not George Clooney. What's his name? He's not cool.
Well, that's...
Ryan Gosling's cool.
Well, George Clooney plays cool in all the Ocean's films, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't believe he's... I don't think he's cool.
Your choice. You've chosen to imagine Ryan Gosling sucking on a cow's teat. I don't think that's cool.
If you shrug beforehand, I might as well.
No, I'm sorry, it's still not cool.
It's cool. Imagine Ryan Gosling just shrugging and then sucking from the teat.
Yeah. I think there's no way to... Even Ryan Gosling, I think, would lose his cool at that moment.
If you just... Sort of just put your foot on it and...
On what?
The udder and kicked it.
How's
so the teat... So that, and squeeze it with your foot and then the milk shot in the air and you caught it in your mouth.
Well, so the cow's upside down?
No, you're angling it.
Well, you kick in the udder... I mean, this is... How are you kicking an udder and it is still pointed towards your mouth?
I'm gently I'm pressurising the udder with my foot, and I'm using, and that pressure is causing the problem is the milk will come out of all of the teats.
Yeah, I just think you need to go back to the drawing board on this. I don't think it's gonna work out. I mean, because you're trespassing, you need to be in and out there fast.
I hope this mouth also goes away, so I'm going to get myself in all sorts of trouble.
You really are. Okay, well, we're going to talk about films, but before we do, we should probably talk about our sponsor, who I'm sure is thrilled with all of the other chat. We're sponsored by HerFilmProject.com, which is an organisation that helps promote diversity in films. So if you are interested in such things, if you would like to get some help with your film project, then go to HerFilmProject.com and follow Her Film Project on Twitter. @HerFilmProject.
If you want to make a film about Ryan Gosling kicking a cow in the udder and squirting milk in his mouth...
Mm. Then you probably should talk to Ryan Gosling about that, because that is, to my mind, your biggest hurdle.
But you could get that funded by at her film project.
I mean, yes. If Ryan Gosling's involved, I think you could get it funded by anyone.
Well, okay.
But why not?
If it's
why
just not? A normal bloke...
If it's a normal
bloke kicking a cow on the other to get the milk out...
Then give them a call, see what they say.
Okay.
Why not? This week we are going to be doing a Netflix special. We've done them every now and again. People seem to like them because they're already paying for their Netflix subscriptions and they want to know what they can see. So we've been watching a few films. We've looked through the list, you know. We're Netflix fans, aren't we, Marek?
Well, I think... I've noticed I have subscribed to Netflix and I unsubscribed for about a year, having seen it all, and then I subscribed again, and they've got quite a lot of the big films on there.
Yeah, but they've got some decent older ones as well. It's not just, you know, new glitzy things.
Yeah,
but...
well, the first one I was going to talk about is what they've done is they've actually, and this is we talked last week about a death of cinema. I think this is, what does prescient mean?
Sort of forward looking. It's sort of almost like it predicted something.
So not what's the word for relevant that begins with P? There it is. This is relevant anyway. Or we call it prevalent.
Prevalent.
Not prevalent. A different word. I saw a film that was released instead of as exclusively on Netflix.
Okay.
It's called Small Crimes. And it was written and is directed by some Evan Katz and Macon Blair. I don't know if it's Macon or Macon Blair, who, with his friend, made Blue Room, which I raved about a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And Green Room. So an up-and-coming sort of director or writer. Small Crimes. And this stars, the cast is really good. Nicholas Coster-Waldau, who you all know is Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones.
He's fantastic in Headhunters.
Yes. Jackie Weaver, who plays the Australian mum in that criminal thing, Snowtown, is it, or something like that? One of those. She's brilliant. And Robert Foster, who's, you know, Jackie Brown. Yeah.
Gary Cole is in it.
Oh, Midnight Callers,
yeah.
Gary Cole. One of the most underused great actors.
What was that film we watched that he was in? Hang on.
I'm going to cover for you by saying this. Gary Cole, Gary Cole.
It's a good song. It's a very good song.
He's been in Office Space, he plays a bad guy.
I am actually thinking of Talladega Nights, which I rewatched recently, where plays Ricky Bobby's dad. Yeah, he's excellent.
So this is it's a film about a man who's in prison and he gets released after some crime and goes back to his life, but he gets embroiled in crime again.
Okay.
I don't really want to talk about much. I'm just going to say it's been recommended by people, but I've given it 3 Mareks. It's boring.
Oh, that's a shame. It's got so many good ingredients,
but it lacks humour. There needs to be humour. Nicholas Coster-Waldau sort of plays a sort of loserish bloke. He's almost too good looking to do that. And it just doesn't work.
That's a shame.
It doesn't work. So I watched it and I thought, I could talk about this to our listeners, but I almost don't want to because it's not good enough to merit. Just don't watch it. It's a really average. I'm really disappointed in Netflix, actually, that this was...
Well, the way that Netflix works is, unless they've changed, is they don't actually make things themselves. They are still a distribution arm in some way. Some things they'll fund, they'll help fund, but when people have made their film and are looking for distribution, they can go to Netflix and Netflix will just pay them a flat fee and go, right, we own it now, it's now a Netflix original, and we'll slap that banner all over it. And the studio will often do this if they don't think their film it risks not making any money in the cinema.
Oh, really?
Because they can get a flat amount of money off Netflix for licensing it, or they can risk putting it in cinemas and see how much they make in box office returns.
And they won't make as much if they try and resell it to Netflix because it's no longer exclusive.
There you go. So sometimes they go, well, it's a Netflix original now. We made this film. We're not going to bother with a cinema release. It's a Netflix film.
So what you're saying is Netflix original means quite shit.
It means the producers weren't willing to gamble.
Well, I think they made the right move selling it to Netflix. A film with nice ingredients and just doesn't taste right.
I'm not saying Netflix buys anything either. I don't know. You know, they presumably there has to be something in it for them. And with this, it sounds like the cast is what's in it for them, because enough people will give it a try.
Just the script wasn't good enough. Now, I'm going to talk about another film instead. Sorry, that's a bit of a rambling start.
That's all right.
This is how I choose my films on Netflix. You've probably got a way of you choosing them as well. I hate the menu system. I mean, people have written jokes about how shit the menu system is and how deeply everything's buried in it.
Yeah.
I find the quickest way to do it is to go find something good. Go to critically acclaimed films.
Yep.
Scan through those, see which ones I don't see. Or look up genres. I'll traditionally go for dramas or thrillers or foreign language films and then scroll through those and see which ones I haven't seen.
Yes.
How do you choose your Netflix films?
You know what? I don't really have a system. I will just scroll through for bloody ages. But yes, picking a genre. I never go on the list of, because you watch this, you might like this. I always find they're a bit useless. But I'll watch, you know, I'll scroll through. Going, no, seen it, no interest, seen it. Oh, maybe.
Do you think in the future, when people watch films, they'll do, we talked about missing video shops.
Mm.
I think a virtual reality video shop where you just walk around and they're all there in their cases, like.
Yeah, maybe. Why not?
Because that is the best way to
choose. I don't think you'll walk around. I think you'll put your VR headset on your sofa and suddenly. Loads of DVDs will go boop, 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 on all the surfaces in your room, and you can just look at them. No, I don't want that.
I want to walk around the shop.
Well, presumably there'll be an option. You can tick that box, and then you can walk around the shop. Mm. But you'll bash into your own walls, won't you? It's a big problem they have with VR is walking around. It's what they're off topic, but it's what they're finding with the games industry. Is how do you make this in every home? Because the only way they have at the moment is massive travelators that go in all directions, because you've got to be safe when you've got it on.
So that's why they're doing a combination of virtual reality with real life, like Pokemon and stuff like that.
That's augmented reality. It's augmented, very different. Yeah. So you can still see the walls and everything, yeah. But it's also a lot of games that involve your character sitting down and being taken basically on a ride. So, for instance, being a Spitfire pilot, that works well because you just sit and your movement is done when you're in a vehicle. But actually walking around is quite tough to do.
That is interesting.
There you go.
Anyway, so that's how we pick our films. And I picked a film in the critically acclaimed films. I sort of worked my way through them that I hadn't seen before. Or even heard before. It's called The Pawnbroker.
Okay.
And I was attracted to it because it had Rod Steiger in it. And I mention Rod Steiger to people and they just make jokes about Kurt Steiger. It's a real shame because I think Rod Steiger was one of my favourite actors. Absolutely brilliant actor. You would know him from playing Marlon Brando's brother in On the Waterfront.
Oh, yeah.
And most famously for in The Heat of the Night, which is the great drama with Sidney Poitier and him, when there's a murder in a town and Sidney Poitier is playing a detective who is on route, gets accused of this murder first of all, and realise he's a detective on route to another job, and they help solve this case.
Okay.
Absolutely brilliant. And Rod Steiger is an incredible actor who. For this, he got nominated for the an Oscar for the best actor. I think it's one of the most incredible performances. The Pawnbroker is a story of it's based on a book, and he's playing a pawnbroker in New York called Sol Nazeman, who runs his pawnbroking shop in the sort of rough area. And all you see at the very start, you see him back in. Germany, where he was with his family, a young family, literally 20 years before, and everyone's really happy, and then the music turns out and you realise they're Jewish and you realise the Nazis are approaching. And what's great about this, we talked about this a few weeks ago, of great backdrops for films. And we talked about 10 Cloverfield Lane and how that was really fascinating because you had the whole Cloverfield thing.
Yeah.
But it was set in this bunker.
Yeah.
And you could apply this to this film as well. In fact, it's set in a pawnbroker shop, the main shop. And yet he's a man who doesn't speak much. But he's got this weight. Basically, his life has been completely ruined 20 years ago.
Right.
Where he's having to deal with the... This is 20 years on from the drama of the... You know, well, from the drama, from the Holocaust and him losing everything. And he, and what's great about it, it is, in terms of... A lot of the Holocaust films are... of the actual event happening. And you only... And it's a horror of it happening.
Yeah.
You don't really see the lasting effects of sort of an old man... who is numbed by war, and his performance is so brilliant. Sidney Lumet directed it. I don't know if I pronounce it right. He's a very famous director. Shot in black and white. It looks beautiful. It feels very 60s, this sort of New York.
When was it made?
1964.
Right.
I think 64, 62.
I'm just looking it up. That's right. The Pawnbroker. Okay, yes, yes.
I think it is one of my favourite ever performances by an actor.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's... He doesn't say much, and he's very... He's very... Because he had a reputation of being overdramatic and playing weirdo. I think he played Al Capone and stuff like that. It's quite... It reminded me... you know, apparently, like Ryan Gosling in Drive, the books... he cut out a lot of the words. A lot of the script was cut back, so
yeah.
It feels like this pent-up... rage of someone who feels alienated by society. I think a lot of people, and I think this feels quite, I know he was alienated because of the Holocaust, I think this feels quite relevant now where there's so much going on and so much shit, people are numbed by constant need, you know, you're just numbed by it.
Yeah, it leads to a lot of people's attitudes towards existence being, fuck it, you know, doesn't it? Because people just can't bear the alternative, you know,
just totally numb by society. So I really sympathise with this character. I mean, you can feel a lot how he does by just going on the tube for an hour. You have a very similar feeling of really feeling ostracised by society. There's a couple of really interesting points about this film. This was the first film that they used to have before the before, you know, how they judge films, they've got the movie rating system, I can't remember what it's called. It came in 1968, the movie approval rating system, where they age things.
Oh, certification.
Yeah, before that was a thing called the production code, which lasted from like 1930 somewhere to 1968, when films judged what could morally be acceptably be put in a film in America.
Yeah, yeah.
And in 1960, which was the first film that had showed bare breasts, and it passed the production code,
right?
Where they said that it feels like it's appropriate for that to be in this film rather than being gratuitous or sexual. So there is a great movie fact for you.
Well, yeah, they opened the floodgates for so many.
As soon as they got their knockers out in that film, it was literally.
What like, cinema was now about.
Like going on holiday to France in the 80s.
I remember seeing bare breasts in a kid's film in France.
Yeah, all over. Any excuse they'd get them out.
Something for the parents.
Yeah. Yeah, so 1964 it was made. I think there are... what's interesting, you've got the bad guy played the pimp. Is the guy, Brock Peters, who you would...
Yes, I recognise him. Yeah,
recognise him from lots of films. There's just loads of brilliant performances in it, and they're quite unusual performances.
He plays an admiral in Star Trek V, Brock Peters.
Yeah, there are just some absolutely brilliant scenes which you only get when you've got people who. What it does is it has a sense of history, so it establishes this character who's completely numb. He's got this massive, huge backstory, so you understand his reactions to things. He meets a woman in it who is working for a charity who lost her husband and tries to be friends with him. You have characters that aren't necessarily fashionable now. Why would you make a film about an old man now? You wouldn't see that as much. You wouldn't see
unless he was an aging film star. You wouldn't get that made.
Yeah, and the lady who's working for charity, she's in her sort of 50s, I think late 50s. She's lost her partner. You don't really, and she's trying to find some sort of friendship. these are captures that you don't really see, and each, and still it's quite slow at the start, but it builds in terms of action of like him running the pawnbroker. He's got a young assistant who needs money, and the people come in, all the characters are coming asking for money. Immediately they feel like well-rounded characters, and you get a sense of their history and the desperation of going into the pawnbroker shop. It felt quite a realistic portrayal of sort of life, without quite bleak but quite true. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. I mean, I give it 9 or 10 Mareks, but if you, I'm just amazed that no one has told me about the pawnbroker before.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
I never heard of it. I just thought, what is that on the list? I'll give that a shot, and I think it should be given far more acclaim than it is. It's got 7.8 on IMDb,
and on Netflix it doesn't have a rating, presumably because not enough people have seen it.
I think it's one of the best ever acting performances. I think it looks absolutely magnificent, and you realise just shooting in black and white, you know, on black and white film, when it's lit properly and it's shot properly, it looks great. Go and watch, don't go and watch Small Crime, some shit new release. Watch The Pawnbroker. Just go to any of those critically acclaimed films and you'll see some great stuff on there. And I've been speaking to some people recently, said, oh, don't watch old films, and they classified 1960s as old, or black and white as old. It's madness. Don't be put off by it. Go and watch The Pawnbroker.
Well, there you go. I mean, I've seen something on Netflix this week as well, a complete sort of, I know nothing about that, I'll give it a go. And it has resonant themes with The Pawnbroker, by the sounds of it, in that it is about understanding the backstory of a man, so we can, before we can sort of judge his actions. And it's based on a true story. It's called Shepherds and Butchers, or in some services it's called The Hangman : Shepherds and Butchers, to try and get more people
colon,
to watch
not
it.
Not written colon, not colon.
No, it's
colon.
The you know, the two dots. Colon.
Why is it? Sorry to go off. It's funny,
colon?
It's called colon, isn't it? Mm. When colon is it? I mean, you ordinarily think of like a load of shit.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? I mean, English is like that. There's all sorts of.
What word would you call it instead of colon?
The dotty dots.
Well, you would change. Would you change the word for colon? The.
I'd just change. I'd just change the body part to shit pipe.
You're right.
I mean, it does exactly what it says on the tip.
Colon's a good word as well.
Colon and shit pipe. Yeah. So that's really what I wanted to talk about was
sorry.
No, this is a film based on a true story. It's a courtroom drama set in South Africa.
All right, Matt.
That's right. There's a lot of that going on. Okay, it's about this boy called Leon Lebuchana.
All right, Leon, Matt.
Leon Lebuchana. And basically, he's in this horrendous altercation where at night on a road, he ends up in a sort of near accident with a van of, I think it's a sports team actually, and he ends up shooting them all dead. And it's his court case of.
True story?
Yes, of what happened. Now, and you go, well, it's open and shut, isn't it? That's it, that's it. And his lawyer explores his past that as a young boy, he was admitted into the people who, what's the word, orchestrate the death penalty in South Africa. And so he was 16 years old, given very little training, and the things he endured and had to see in that job and the way he was treated, we explore and find out, you know.
Oh, so he was the executioner's basically part of that.
Yeah, he's one of the executioners. But as a 16-year-old boy, basically first job out of school, you know.
Work experience.
Work experience, yeah. Yeah. And it was during a period in South Africa's history where they executed a record number of people in a short space of time.
When is it set?
It's set in, it's like the 1980s, or hang on. It's a very good question, and I should know the answer to this.
I'm going to cover by doing some accents.
Excellent.
Oh, this is your first job, right, Blue? Okay, just go and just go and check that bloke.
These events, I think, led to the abolition of the death penalty, which was in 1995. So I think this is in the 80s, early 80s. Now, what?
I love the 80s.
What? Yeah, it's great, isn't it? What drew me to this film at first was because the lawyer who's defending him, who's the main character in this, is played by Steve Coogan. A very odd choice to play a South African lawyer in a serious, such a dark and serious political drama, but I thought, I want to see him give this a go, because in 24-Hour Party People, which admittedly is a bit frivolous, but is great fun, he's excellent, and in Michael Winterbottom's films, I really like Steve Coogan as well, and I think that him and Michael Winterbottom work brilliantly together. They've done The Trip on TV recently, but they did The Look of Love, and they did Cock and Bull Story.
Did they do Philomena?
Now, Philomena is the one that got all the Oscar noms and stuff, which I still haven't seen.
You're lucky, because it's also on Netflix.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
It's going to be one of my recommendations.
No, Stephen Frears did Philomena, so that's different. That's different. But anyway, so I thought, well, give this a go, see what Coogan's like,
My one question is, is always with Coogan,
yeah,
you can probably guess the question, what percentage Partridge was he in each film?
It's quite Partridge-y, yeah.
What percent? Because The Look of Love, something like eight, is 80% Partridge, I mean.
Well, if you think that, this is probably 85.
Really?
I don't know. He uses his own vulnerability, and he's used that in Partridge already. So every look of sort of panic in his eyes, we read as Partridge, but it's just him giving his, you know... It's got moments of really moving stuff, especially when we flash back in time and see the experiences this boy had to endure as an executioner. With the all white guards versus the all black convicts, you know. And it's harrowing. It's harrowing viewing, but it's done excellently with the cinematography and the sound as well. You really feel like you're there, and it's great filmmaking.
Was the sports team he killed, were they black or white?
All black.
Okay.
So I'm really sorry to say it, but the film is a bit weak, and it's because of Steve Coogan.
Because of the Partridge?
It's not because of the Partridge, it's because of the accent. Like, he came from doing impressions, and the problem is he's not inhabiting it. His accent is really dodgy.
He's as good as my accent, Brew.
About as good as your accent. Like, it comes and goes. It goes Nottingham at the end of sentences all the time. And to the point where it's too distracting to actually enjoy the political drama that's happening.
Did it come out, this film? Why have I not heard of it?
It's came out in 2016, so last year. And I don't know, maybe it's because it's a story that doesn't... people don't think it has relevance to them, the end of the death penalty in South Africa, but I would argue, you know...
The story sounds great.
The story is great, and I won't tell you what happens at the end, because it's a true story, you know. And it doesn't take the side of history you'd expect, because in a very, you know, genuine sense, this is the story of a white lawyer arguing that a white man should get off the murdering of several black people. You know, so it's like, okay, that's sort of not usually what we show in these sort of who's the victim here films. But it is interesting, but, I mean, just to give you an I'm not alone here. Here is one of the two pieces of trivia on IMDb's page about this film. It says, Steve Coogan liked to keep people guessing minute to minute as to what accent he would do next throughout the film, South African or his normal accent. Which is, it's a glib comment. It wavers, and it's really off-putting, especially because South African is so strong.
Yes,
so,
Marty Chippy.
Yes, exactly. It's me, Chippy. But it's, as soon as at the end of sentences, it just goes back to normal.
What would you do then if you were a director, Michael Winterbottom?
It's not him. I'm just saying Michael Winterbottom and he have worked well in the past.
And your actor can't do the accent. Do you just say, just do your normal accent? Because it doesn't really matter. That is less distracting than someone doing a bad accent.
I'd agree. I mean, look at Robin and Prince of Thieves versus Russell Crowe's Robin Hood. Robin and Prince of Thieves, Robin Hood has an American accent. No one cares.
You don't care.
Because he is being an honest human being, and that's what actually matters. We could have believed that Steve Coogan's lawyer character happened to be English. Why would it matter?
I remember watching war films, you know, when everyone did the sort of, in the 70s, 80s war films, where you've got bad Germans played by American actors with American accents, and there's no point you say, "Oh, right, he's." You think he's American. Then you think, actually, as soon as that, it doesn't matter to me.
No, it's true, and it doesn't matter to me either. You know, but this is directed by a guy called Oliver Schmitz, who did Paris Je T'aime, which came out in 2006, and got a bit of. You'll probably recognise the poster there.
Oh, nice poster.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a real shame, and I think it's probably been buried because it's a little bit embarrassing. But there's a really good story in there, and it's very well filmed and done. And you know, the ending is genuinely surprising. It's just it's that one choice that's sort of made it all a bit uncomfortable viewing. You know,
it's the thing about Netflix, isn't it? It's a graveyard of films. You realise once you sift through the first 40 or 50 good films just how many films get made.
Yes.
A lot of them.
Yeah. And this is a good story and an important story, and it's, you know, and I'm a massive Steve Coogan fan. I think he's a really good actor, really interesting actor, but there isn't a truth coming through in what he's doing, because he seems too distracted by an accent he's having difficulty with.
That must be awful.
Yeah.
How many days would you give it?
I think I'd give it 6. Like, I enjoyed it, and as I say, the flashbacks and stuff, it's like, oh yeah, this has got something. But there's an element that's gone awry.
Well, now it's time for this. Well, we're going to change that to there are no letters, because we've run out.
No, people like writing letters.
We may have missed your letter in the past due to admin errors, which I'm constantly apologising for, because I'm aware of this, because someone I wrote on our, which I'll tell you, on iTunes, which you can review our show. Someone wrote in saying, I wrote in and they even read out my letter that called us arseholes, basically. And
oh,
it was purely by just a mistake of it getting lost. We try and read out all of your letters, and if we don't, we apologise.
Why not just find the letter that makes you so angry and just click forward and send us it again? I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, we will read it out. It hasn't been a slight on you. Unless you were that one person who was really angry and racist. So if you are, you know who you are.
Alright. Well, I thought we should go on a Netflix theme.
Yeah.
Just, I've written down a few recommendations.
Ooh, lovely.
Some of them that we've both seen, we've talked about, there's obvious ones we've talked about recently. Your film of the year last year, Hunt for the Wilder People,
yes,
which is excellent. Sing Street, which I absolutely loved. Ex Machina, which we both made our film of the year. Philomena's on there, which I mentioned before.
I want to see now, yes.
Films that I think that aren't necessarily picked out by people. Oh, Birdman's on there as well, that's another one. So
What We Do in the Shadows is the other Taika Waititi one that is, I was surprised how funny I found it, as I thought vampires have been done to death as parody, but it was really good.
Yeah. I would also say, if you like, watch... If you want to watch In the Heat of the Night as well, Sidney Poitier at his best and Rod Steiger at his best, and watch that. That's a great two-hander with a pawnbroker. In the Heat of the Night is an absolutely brilliant film, and about sort of, as well as, you know, detective film with a backdrop of race in the sort of 60s. One's it's very famous, but Remains of the Day is my favourite Anthony Hopkins film. Emma Thompson's in it.
It shows such restraint in a performance from Anthony Hopkins, a restraint he rarely shows anymore.
Yeah, I think it's the best sort of Merchant Ivory
actually
film.
He's back to his restraint in the TV show Westworld, actually. It's a wonderful performance.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's a great actor, you know.
Yeah.
To Kill a Mockingbird's on there, and
bro.
I haven't seen it, which is it's on my list to watch because it's one of those classics that I haven't watched.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I mean, I get put off by I have a go with people watching black and white films, and you think, oh, do I really want to watch it? What's that weird mentality about not wanting to watch a black and white film?
But we're coming around again where full colour, you know, HD graded massive blockbusters are being released in independent cinemas in black and white, so we can see the cinematography sort of unabated.
What is it that's doing that? It was a special.
Mad Max was the first one, but there's another one coming out that's doing it as well, and I'm not sure, I can't remember which
it's
it is.
It's a Mad Max that I saw. And one film I think it's really good, people get put off because it's about collapse of like Lehman Brothers collapse. It's Kevin Spacey before not doing one of his two Kevin Spacey performances. Margin Call, which is a great business thriller, which I don't think you'd ever watch because people who work in the city are generally assholes and you don't want to see them. But this is really, I thought, and you think it'd be boring, but I would thoroughly recommend Margin Call.
I always get it confused with Marwen Call, which is a documentary about a man who makes models.
Watch that as well.
Margin Call and Marwen Call is a good double bill. It's not on Netflix though at the moment. Used to be. Any others you got?
Yes, I think it's in one of the great films. It's in every, people are my age haven't seen this film. My dad recommended it to me. It's one of his favourite films. It's absolutely brilliant. It's A Man for All Seasons. Won 6 Oscars back in 1966, including Best Actor, Best Director, Best Film. Paul Scofield is the actor playing Thomas More in it. It's basically the story of Henry VIII, played by Robert Shaw, from we all know from Jaws, wanting to get a divorce, and the whole, you know, the basically the big story about Henry VIII with the trying to change the Church of England and all that
business.
It's, the script is so brilliant. You've got all these great theatre actors doing lifetime best performances. I saw it about 10 years ago. I was blown away by it then. I need to watch it again. But don't be... I'm just amazed by the amount of people who haven't... No one seems to... I know, seems to have seen A Man for All Seasons. And you should really, if you like film, watch it. It's just great.
Yeah.
Well, there's quite a few there, isn't there?
There's quite a few there. Why not send us in your own Netflix recommendations and we'll pass them on to everybody else? Go to filmfandango.com and you can write to us from there. For God's sake, do. also, we do all of this for free. So if you'd like to contribute towards our running costs for the many, many episodes that we've done now, then again, go to filmfandango.com and click the donate button. Everyone who has, you are a star. You are one of my favourite people, and we know your name because we receive your name when we receive the money. So thank you very much. I'm also doing a live comedy show on the 29th of May called Inside the Comedian, where I interview comedians about their wonderful careers, but they're not allowed to tell the truth. We have to make up an entire backstory for them. I'm doing it on the 29th at the Bill Murray in Islington. With Carrie Adloyd and Margaret Caborn Smith. I would really appreciate an audience being there. So if you have that Monday free, then why not come along? Well, I think that's it for this week.
Keep watching the films.
Bye.
Oh, do you want to say it?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.